Hey there, welcome to episode 333 of the Fantastic Forecast. I'm Dave Elliott, and if I had a clone, I'm not sure if I'd be the good one or the evil one. On today's episode, Fantastic Four 333 from mid-November 1989. What's up with that? The Dream is Dead, Part 2. Strange name for the story. I'm not sure when Part 1 was. The last issue was titled Love's Labor Lost, written by John Harkness. Really, it's Steve Englehart for the last time, and artist Rich Buckler. The story begins at FF headquarters, and the Avengers show up. Thor, Captain America, Hercules, and She-Hulk, along with Doctor Strange. They're worried about the Fantastic Four, who have turned into a gang of thugs, going around New York City, demanding that people pay a fantastic tax, and just generally being a bunch of douchebags. So the Avengers are curious, what's the deal with the FF? Hercules pounds on a desk of a guard in the building's lobby demanding, "We want the bad Fantastic Four!" As if on cue, the elevator door opens up and out comes the bad Fantastic Four. Reed, Sue, Johnny, Sharon, and Ben in his super rocky rock monster body. Johnny says, "Okay, you're looking for us? Well, now we're here, so what?" Captain America asks about the so-called Fantastic Tax they've been demanding, and Hercules wants to know why the FF have been marching around town causing trouble, bullying people, making threats. Ben replies, "Bah, to them we're gods. You should know how gods should live." Hercules snaps back at him, "I come from a race of gods. Thou art a mere mutation." Ooh, Ben got served. Cap tells everyone not to fight, they can work it out, whatever it is, peacefully. Reed says that one problem with that is, the FF were the first superhero team in town, and they have no desire to work with any group of Johnny-come-latelys.
"You tell them, darling,"
Sue chimes in, and then she creates an invisible force field to ram and push the Avengers and Doctor Strange out of the front door. She-Hulk figures that something happened to the FF when Ben went to the Empire State Building looking for Dragon Man. Doctor Strange says that whatever it is, it's not mystical in nature, and Hercules asks if they're robots or maybe clones. Back inside, Sharon tells Sue, "Nice going," for getting rid of the others, and Johnny says he's going to give Reed shit for that Johnny-come-lately comment. And then Hercules rips the door open and yells, "If our friends have been replaced by clones, you five will surrender at once." And he comes in, and he punches the Thing clone in the stomach, and then, as you can imagine, all hell breaks loose. Reed attacks Hercules, and then Sharon attacks Hercules, and then She-Hulk fights with the She-Thing. He-Thing punches Cap. Reed wraps his arms around Thor, and he says that he doesn't understand what they mean by all this clone talk. And Johnny tries to toss some flame balls at Doctor Strange, but then suddenly, Johnny disappears. And then so does Reed and Sue. And then the He-Thing and the She-Thing disappear, leaving the Avengers standing there wondering what the hell is going on. Doctor Strange suggests they head back to his Sanctum Sanctorum and check with his many objects of divination. Yeah, what a great idea. What does that mean? Before they go anywhere, they see a ship blast off from the roof of the building. Doctor Strange grabs Captain America and takes off after it. Meanwhile, in Alberta, Canada, the clone Fantastic Four have appeared, and they have no idea where they are. But somehow, Reed figures they're somewhere in Western Canada.
"Canada? Whoever goes to Canada?"
Sue wonders. I guess she's not going to be getting any offers to be the spokesman for the Canadian Board of Tourism. They come across a big cave and figure they'll go have a look inside. And once inside, they find the real Fantastic Four in a fight with the Frightful Four and Dragon Man. The real FF remembers that before Aaron the Evil Watcher put them in suspended animation, he showed off his clones, which is who this other FF must be. So now the clone FF joined the fight, wanting to kill the real Fantastic Four. So in the middle of this big fight with the real FF, the clone FF, and the evil FF, the real Johnny suggests they work things out, and the clone Johnny says, "We've got no desire to work anything out with Johnny-come-latelys." Nice callback, by the way. But the real Johnny reveals that with his powers, he was able to heat things up in his glass tube and escape from suspended animation. He overheard Aaron the Evil Watcher talking about the clones, calling them his action figures. saying that they were created so he'd have an FF to control. Clone Johnny doesn't like to hear that. But Clone Ben doesn't care. He says,
I'm already much like a clone. A bad clone. Being a clone doesn't frighten me.
The real Johnny, who's doing a lot of talking while the real Reed Richards doesn't say much, quite uncharacteristic of him, the real Johnny points out that they took Aaron the Watcher and put him in a glass tube to freeze him. So now the clone FF are free. Free! Clone Johnny says that he kind of thinks that maybe they are clones. And Clone Reed says it doesn't matter because they're the Fantastic Four now, and he's Mr. Fantastic. Then the wizard flies over and asks,
What then am I?
He doesn't like being left out of the conversation, but Clone Ben punches him in the face. And when Titania attacks Clone Ben, Sue puts her up her force field, and then, once again, a big fight breaks out between the real FF, the clone FF, and the evil FF. And as they fight, the real and the clone FF argue with each other, much to the disgust of the evil FF, the Frightful Four. So the fight between the three teams continues for a few more pages until the clone FF are defeated, and the Frightful Four turn tail and they decide to get the hell out of there. And the real FF chase after them. Sharon pounds on the ground and the four members of the Frightful Four fall over. Next, Reed and the Wizard have a conversation where basically Reed tells Wizard that even though they helped fight the clones, he's not going to let Wizard and his team escape. Wizard says,
Heh, I wouldn't accept a favor from you anyway. All right.
So basically, he agrees to stop running. Back with Aaron the Watcher, he's unfreezing himself and getting out of that glass tube. He says he wasn't really frozen. He was just using the opportunity to watch everyone fight it out. And he says that now, he has a new plan. Reed says,
We'll never stop fighting your plans.
So Aaron reveals what his plans are. Phase 1. He uses his powers to send the Frightful Four back to the maximum security prison for supervillains known as the Vault. Phase 2. He's going to send the Fantastic Four back to their headquarters in New York. And Phase 3. He's going to put his FF clones into the glass tubes and watch their dreams. He says dreams are more exciting than reality. And you can't argue with that, can you? Unless, of course, the dreams are written by John Harkness. So the five members of the Fantastic Four are transported to the roof of their building. And they think everything is back to normal. But Sue points out that she overheard that the clone FF have been acting like assholes and everyone thinks the FF have gone bad. So that's a mess they have to clean up. Now back to that subplot from earlier in the issue, where Doctor Strange and Cap were chasing after that rocket that took off from the Fantastic Four's building. The rocket lands in California, and a Quinjet carrying the West Coast Avengers lands beside it. So Cap, Doctor Strange, and the West Coast Avengers look at the FF rocket that landed, and the door opens up, and out comes Elijah the Skrull and Franklin Richards. The Avengers ask what they're doing. Elijah says that she noticed her husband and the rest of the FF were acting strange, so she asked Franklin, who used his powers to figure out what was going on, and he was able to get into the FF's dreams, and that told him everything. So Elijah, who's blind like Alicia, the person she's impersonating, and Franklin, a little kid, took one of Reed's rockets and flew it across the country. I am not sure how they managed to do that. Doctor Strange asked why they came to this place, someone's front yard, in Oakland, California. So the man who lives in that house in Oakland comes out with his wife and two kids. And Franklin says to him,
Mr. Harkness, you're the writer on the FF comic book these days, and it would be nice if you could write a comic to let everyone know my daddy's really a good guy, and this was all a mistake.
And John Harkness says, I'll try, but it might take a better man than me to straighten out this mess. And that better man is Walt Simonson. And that's how this issue ends, in a very meta way, with the Steve Englehart pseudonym John Harkness appearing as a real character in the actual story. Oh, it's pretty nuts. And with that, the very strange and much maligned Steve Englehart run comes to an end. At the time, Englehart was very vocal in the comic book press, as small as it was in the late 80s, about his displeasure with the way the editors at Marvel were treating him and not allowing him to do what he wanted to do on the book, with the biggest point of contention being the replacement of Reed and Sue. In my opinion, the biggest problem wasn't the loss of Reed and Sue, but the inclusion of Crystal and Miss Marvel. First, the love triangle between Crystal, Johnny, and fake Alicia is about as compelling as the love triangle between my dad, my mom, and that weird device my mom keeps in her nightstand drawer. And oddly enough, similar, very similar. The last time Johnny and Crystal had sex was decades ago, and Alicia isn't even a human being. Back in the 1980s, I kind of liked Johnny and Alicia as a couple, or who I thought was Alicia. I wasn't even alive in the 1960s when Johnny and Crystal were a couple, but seeing them back together was interesting for like 3 minutes. Kind of like seeing Sonny and Cher reuniting on the Letterman show, but if Crystal went skiing off into a tree, I doubt we would miss her. For a moment there, I thought they might be teasing us with a possibility of a threesome between Johnny and the girls. And if anything gets my interest, it's a good threesome. Of course, threesomes between one man and two women seem to be the least practical of all the threesome combinations. There's one tallywhacker for 6 lady holes. That 1-to-6 ratio is completely out of whack. Eh, it's not like Johnny was ever going to cheat on his wife anyway. It's not like he's Michael Jordan, the basketball player. And certainly, he wasn't going to have a threesome, as cool as that would have been. And speaking of group sex, let's talk about Sharon Ventura, who is a female wrestler, a second-rate sport, who goes by the name of Miss Marvel, not the original Miss Marvel, but a second-rate Miss Marvel, and then things got even worse when she became a rock monster, a second-rate thing. By the way, what are the odds that cosmic rays would affect her the same way they affected Ben? Lots of other people were exposed to cosmic rays and they didn't become rock monsters. For example, Reed Richards, Sue Storm, Johnny Storm, and Sandra Bullock. Not a single rock monster among them. Also, Miss Marvel's gang rape backstory seemed a little out of place in a superhero comic like this. Sure, it was subtle and not made 100% clear, but I was a teenager. I knew exactly what was going on. I had seen stories on TV about Tawana Brawley, and even though both rapes were fictitious, it doesn't make them any less disturbing. After the unfortunate incident, Sharon was left with some severe emotional damage. Emotional damage that went away rather quickly after she became a rock monster and realized that no men wanted to have sex with her anymore. Oh great, there's a solution to the long-term emotional damage suffered by rape victims. If only they could all be rock monsters. The only problem with that is that if a rock monster existed in the real world, men would still want to have sex with her. Because men are pigs. And I would assume any rock monster would be famous. And as we know, any celebrity, no matter how disgusting, has no problem getting laid. Just look at the cast of Jersey Shore. Now, if you ever mention the She Thing era of the Fantastic Four, people laugh. This version of the Fantastic Four has gone down in history as a bit of a joke, just like the other laughable teams from the past, such as Marvel's The Champions, DC's Justice League of Detroit, and the Hartford Whalers. Another problem I have is accepting Ben Grimm as a leader of the team, replacing Reed. It's so important for any team to have a good leader. Reed was a brilliant man who could have solved any problem with his mind, and Ben is not. The only worse commander of 1989 is Joseph Hazelwood. But at least he only fucked up the coast of Alaska, which barely qualifies as a real state anyway. Any U.S. state where people use the phrase, hockey mom, should be immediately annexed by Canada. It was weird to see Ben showing so much interest in having sex with a woman. His old relationship with Alicia was so non-sexual. I liked it. It's a lot more fun as a reader and as a podcaster to make fun of his ambiguous sexuality. Like the good times we used to have back in school making fun of the boy who was taking ballet lessons. Okay, I'll admit it here for the first time. I was secretly taking ballet lessons too. But hell, I look good in tights, so y'all can suck it. Now I do appreciate that Steve Englehart took some chances and tried to do something unique with the team. He definitely gets an A for effort, but it's kind of like when they used to give the kids in school an award for making an effort to come to school every day, never missing a day. Admirable. But the end result was, they made all the rest of us sick. I do like the earlier part of Englehart's run, better than the later part, when the editors started making lots of demands. Englehart is kind of like the exact opposite of John Byrne. This happened a few times. When a Marvel editor pissed off Byrne, he flew off the handle and immediately quit that book. Englehart just took his name off the book and kept writing it for an entire year. Has any comic book writer ever stayed on a book for so long under such circumstances where they were so unhappy that they took their name off the book? It must be some kind of record. So in conclusion, I have to take my hat off to Steve Englehart. His run may have been bad, but at least it wasn't boring. And for someone doing a podcast about every single issue, that's all I can ask for, to not be bored. And if I could travel back in time to 1998, that's exactly what I would tell Chris Claremont. But unfortunately, I don't have a time machine, so we're shit out of luck there. So that's all I have to say about issue 333 and Steve Englehart. Coming next time, the beginning of a Walt Simonson run on the book, as a writer, you can find my favorite panels from each issue of the Fantastic Four and other stuff on my blog at www.podcastff.blogspot.com. You can download other episodes at iTunes or find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. My other podcast, Comic Book Doggerel, D-O-G-G-E-R-E-L, can be found at iTunes or search for it at podomatic.com. And if you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over. It's a tragedy for me to see the dream is over.